A Werewolf Romance, written by Lillian Gerard. Prologue. Your bastard son is dead. Let me tell you this story the right way. My way. The way it actually happened, not how the pack gossips say it did. I was 25 years old when I learned that love could be measured in the silence between heartbeats. 25 when I discovered that a marriage could die in increments, so small you don't notice until the corpse is rotting in your bed. My name is Celine, and this is the story of how I went from Luna to Ghost, from the mate who bore an Alpha's heir to the woman who whispered death into his perfect world. But let me take you back to the beginning. To the day I lost my son. Chapter 1. The day the world turned red. I remember the exact moment I realized my son was gone. Not just dead, but gone. Erased from the house like he'd never existed. It was on a Tuesday, the day I watched my 3-year-old son bleed out in your arms. Tuesday. It was raining. The kind of cold, relentless rain that turns dirt to mud and makes everything smell like rust and decay. Lucas had been chasing a butterfly through the garden. So small, so impossibly fragile, his blonde curls bouncing with each toddling step. I'd turned my back for one moment. One single moment to pick a tomato for his lunch. The echo of his laughter still hung in the air when I heard the snap. The scream, the sudden, awful silence. A copperhead, hidden in the roses my mate had planted for our anniversary, one bite to his tiny ankle. I ran with him in my arms, screaming for Marcus, screaming for help, screaming at the heavens. But by the time the healer arrived, Lucas's veins had turned black beneath his skin, his blue eyes already filming over with that terrible, final blankness. The healer, old Brennan, with his weathered hands and kind eyes, took one look and shook his head. He's gone, Luna. Just like that. 3 words, and my son was reduced to a body cooling in my arms, while the rain mixed with my tears and the mud drank his blood. Marcus found us there. His roar shattered windows 3 territories away. The Alpha's grief so powerful, it sent seasoned warriors to their knees. But grief doesn't raise the dead. Not even an Alpha's grief. They buried Lucas on Wednesday. The sun came out. That felt like the worst betrayal of all. Chapter 2. The diagnosis that killed us. They said I couldn't conceive again. 6 months after we buried our son, after the silence in our bed had grown thick enough to choke on, I went to the healer. Something was wrong. My cycles were irregular, painful, accompanied by bleeding that left me weak for days. Brennan's face when he examined me was carefully blank, the way healers are when they're about to deliver a death sentence. "The trauma, Luna," he said gently. "The grief. It's damaged your womb. Your body thinks it's still protecting the child you lost." "Can you fix it?" Marcus asked, his voice hard. Hard with hope. Hard with desperation. Brennan shook his head. "Some wounds aren't for healing. Some losses are final." My mate's face closed like a door slamming shut. I saw it happen. The moment hope died in him. Replaced by something cold and unreachable. He didn't touch me that night, or the next, or the one after that. I was 26 years old when I learned that infertility could make you invisible in your own marriage, that not being able to bear children turned you from Luna to Ghost, present but not seen, there but not wanted. I tried. Gods, I tried. I made his favorite meals that he didn't eat. I wore the silk nightgown he'd once loved peeling from my skin. I stood before him naked and offered him everything. My body, my heart, my broken pieces. And he looked through me like I was made of glass. "I need an heir," he said one night, not looking at me. Just stating a fact into the darkness between us. "I know. My voice cracked. I'm sorry. Don't apologize. He finally turned, and his eyes were the coldest thing I'd ever seen. Colder than the earth over Lucas's grave. It isn't your fault. But it was. It was my body that had failed. My womb that had betrayed us. My grief that had poisoned the well. I knew it. He knew it. The whole pack knew it. The silence became our third mate. It slept between us, ate our words, drank our love until there was nothing left but two strangers sharing a title and a bed that hadn't been touched in months. I was 27 when I first smelled her on him. Chapter 3, The Perfume of Betrayal. Her name was Isabella, a beta from the Southern Territories, all dark hair and easy smiles and a laugh that didn't carry the weight of dead children. He brought her to the estate as a consultant, some nonsense about trade routes and border negotiations. I saw the way she looked at him, the way her eyes traced the lines of his shoulders, the way her scent, jasmine and entitlement, clung to his clothes when he came home late. I was 28 years old when I learned that a mate could smell like another woman and still call you Luna, like it meant something. The first time I confronted him, he laughed. Actually laughed, the sound like broken glass in my ears. Don't be ridiculous, Celine. I'm the Alpha. I have duties. Duties that require her perfume in your hair? His face hardened. Watch your tone. You're still my mate. Am I? The words came out soft. Devastated. Because it doesn't feel like it. He didn't answer. Just turned and walked away, leaving me standing in our empty bedroom, clutching the stuffed wolf Lucas used to sleep with, breathing in the fading scent of our dead son and my mate's betrayal. The affair didn't start with a bang. It started with whispered phone calls, late-night meetings, a new scent clinging to his collars. It started with me becoming more and more invisible, shrinking into the corners of my own life until I was just a ghost who cooked meals no one ate and slept in a bed no one shared. I was 29 when he stopped coming home altogether. Chapter 4. The Tuesday everything ended again, it was Tuesday. Again. Tuesdays were cruel to me. I was in Lucas's room, which I still kept exactly as he'd left it. Toys on the floor, blanket rumpled, the ghost of his laughter somehow still trapped in the yellow curtains I was touching his things, as I did every day, trying to hold on to the only piece of him I had left. Marcus found me there. He stood in the doorway, his frame filling the space, his presence overwhelming the small room he smelled of her. So much of her that I wanted to vomit. Celine. His voice was different. Final. I didn't turn. You're leaving me. Don't make this harder than it has to be. Harder, as if the last 2 years of silence and rejection and smelling another woman on my mate had been easy. As if burying my son and then being told I was defective had been a gentle process. Isabella is pregnant. The words fell like stones into still water. She's carrying my heir. The world didn't tilt. It didn't spin, it just stopped. The air crystallized in my lungs. My heart forgot how to beat. I was 29 years old and I had been replaced. Erased. My failure as a woman, as a Luna, as a mother, was complete. I turned slowly. You're sure it's yours? His jaw tightened. Don't. Don't what? Don't question the woman who's sleeping with my mate in my territory. Don't wonder if the child she's carrying is just her ticket to a throne. She's giving me what you can't. The blow was physical. I felt it crack something in my chest. Something that had been held together with grief and desperate hope. Get out. I'll have the papers drawn up, I'll be generous. You'll want for nothing. I have nothing now. I held his gaze, letting him see the ruins he'd made of me. You took it all. He left. Just walked away, leaving me in our dead son's room with the scent of his mistress in my nose and the echo of his betrayal ringing in my ears. I sank to the floor, clutching Lucas's blanket, and bled. Not tears. Something darker. Something that felt like the final death of the woman I'd been. I was 29 when I learned that a heart could break so completely it simply stopped feeling. Chapter 5. The Secret That Saved Me. I left that night, packed one bag, took Lucas's blanket, Mama's locket, and the small wooden wolf Marcus had carved for our son before he was born. I left the papers unsigned on the kitchen table. Let him chase me. Let him explain to the pack why his Luna had vanished like smoke. I traveled south. Far south. To the territories where no one knew my name, or my face, or the weight of my grief, I found a small village, rented a room above a tavern, and planned to disappear. To become no one. Just a woman with ghosts for company, and a belly that was flat and useless. Except it wasn't flat. Not exactly. 3 weeks after I left, I woke up bleeding. Not just the spotting I'd been experiencing, full, heavy bleeding that soaked through sheets and left me weak and shaking. I panicked. The healers had said my womb was damaged. That conception was impossible. But my breasts were tender, and my stomach was cramping in a way that felt different than the monthly pain I'd grown used to. I found a healer in the village, an old Omega woman with kind eyes and gnarled hands, who took one look at me and knew. "You're with child, girl." I laughed. Actually laughed, the sound hysterical. "That's impossible. I'm bleeding. I've been bleeding for days." "Sometimes happens," she said gently. Especially with our kind. The body doesn't know what's normal anymore. The baby holds on anyway. On the baby. My hands went to my stomach, flat and empty, and yet not. But the healers said, healers don't know everything. Life finds a way, especially when it has something to prove. I was 30 years old when I learned that hope could grow in the most barren places. That my body, my defective, broken, useless body, had been harboring a secret. A miracle. A middle finger to every diagnosis, every rejection, every moment I'd believed I was less than whole, I thought about telling him. About sending word that his Luna, his cast-off mate, his broken thing, was finally carrying his child. But then I remembered Isabella's jasmine-scented triumph. His cold eyes. The way he'd said, "She's giving me what you can't." No, this child was mine. Mine alone. Not an heir to an alpha who'd discarded us. Not a replacement for the son we'd lost. This was my redemption. My secret. My revenge. They'd have their perfect family. Their alpha and his fertile mistress and their precious child. And I'd have mine, hidden away, safe from a father who only wanted what we could give him. I was 30 years old when I decided to become invisible on purpose, to be the ghost they'd already treated me as, but a ghost with teeth. Chapter 6. The Years of Being No One. I had a daughter, a perfect, furious, beautiful girl with her father's dark hair and my green eyes. And a laugh that sounded like bells ringing in a church where no one prayed I named her Hope. Not because I was sentimental, but because it was the most subversive thing I could think of. Hope in a world that had tried to break me. The bleeding didn't stop. Not completely. Every month, like clockwork, I'd bleed. The healer said it might never stop. That my body was confused. That the pregnancy had triggered something. But hope grew strong and healthy, and I learned that you could carry life and death in the same body, that you could bleed and still create. It felt like a metaphor for everything I'd survived. We moved every 6 months, never staying long enough to be remembered. I worked as a healer in small villages, using the Luna gift that had skipped Marcus's family, but flowed strong in mine. I mended broken bones, eased difficult births, calmed frightened children. I became known, not as Luna, not as Celine, but as the woman with healing hands who asked for nothing too much, but enough coin to feed her daughter. But I was a Luna once, and I saved some. Hope grew. She had her first shift at 4, a small silver wolf with eyes too wise for her age. She asked about her father once I told her he was a star in the sky, which was true enough. He was distant, cold, and impossible to reach. When Hope turned 5, I finally let myself breathe. We'd made it. 5 years of running, of hiding, of building a life from nothing. I bought a permanent house in a village so far south it barely appeared on maps I took in more healing work, settled into the quiet rhythm of a life that was finally, blessedly mine. I was 35 years old when I learned that you could build an entire life from the ashes of another, that you could be both mother and father, both strong and soft, both broken and whole. And then the rumor started. Chapter 7. The Kingdom's Rot. They traveled like poison through the territories. The Alpha King of Blackwood Pack was in trouble. His precious mistress, the beautiful Isabella, who'd given him his long-awaited heir, had been playing a long game. She was the daughter of a rival Alpha, planted to infiltrate his pack, to bear his child, to give her father leverage. The heir wasn't even his. She'd been pregnant before she ever touched Marcus. The timing carefully planned. The paternity, a lie. Word was Marcus had discovered the truth. That he'd confronted her. That she'd taken the child, his supposed son, and vanished into the night with him, leaving Marcus with nothing but the throne he'd chosen over his true mate, and the echo of laughter that wasn't his. I heard these stories in a tavern in a village so far south, it barely appeared on maps. I was tending a cut on a boy's hand. When the words reached me, I froze, my gift pulsing, the warmth in my palms turning cold. Marcus had a son who wasn't his, a son who was now gone. Hope looked up from where she was drawing in the dirt. Mama? You look sad. I forced a smile. Just tired, baby. But I wasn't tired. I was something else. Something that felt like vindication and grief twisted so tightly together I couldn't tell them apart. He'd chosen a child that wasn't real over the life we could have had. He'd thrown me away for a lie. I should have been happy. I should have felt the universe balancing scales. Instead, I just felt empty. Chapter 8. The Return. I didn't plan to go back, but life has a way of forcing your hand. Hope got sick. Not just sick. Fever burning so hot she radiated heat. Her small body convulsing with seizures that made her wolf howl in terror. The local healer took one look and shook her head. She needs pack magic, she said. The kind only a true Alpha's blood can provide. Without it. She didn't finish. She didn't have to. I packed our things that night. Hope, weak and trembling, clutched her father's wooden wolf. Are we going home, Mama? Yes, baby. My voice was steady. We're going home. I was 36 years old when I learned that pride has no place when your child's life is at stake. That you can hate someone with every fiber of your being and still need them to save the person you love most. We traveled north. Slowly. Hope's condition worsening with each mile. By the time Blackwood Territory came into view, she was barely conscious. Her breathing shallow. Her skin hot enough to burn. The guards at the border didn't recognize me. 5 years had etched lines into my face, turned my hair silver at the temples, stolen the softness I'd once had. I was harder now, sharper. A woman who'd survived being discarded and had learned to thrive in the wilderness. I need to see the Alpha, I said, my voice carrying the weight of command I'd learned as a mother protecting her young. And you are? The Beta Guard sneered. I pulled back the blanket covering Hope's face. I'm the mother of his child. The guard's eyes widened. He saw the resemblance, the hair, the bone structure, the scent that was pure alpha blood mixed with something else. Something he'd been trained to recognize. He let us through. Marcus met us in the great hall. He looked older, harder. There were silver threads in his dark hair now, and lines around his eyes that hadn't been there before. He stood on the dais, the throne behind him, and stared at me like he was seeing a ghost. Celine. My name was a whisper, a prayer, a curse. Marcus. I kept my voice level. This is Hope, your daughter. She's dying. The words landed like a physical blow. He stumbled, actually stumbled, his hand shooting out to steady himself on the arm of his throne. Daughter? She has the fever. I laid Hope on the floor, the marble cold beneath her burning skin. The kind only pack magic can cure. The kind only her alpha father can give. She was so small for nearly 6 years old. My constant moving, the difficult pregnancy, the isolation had made her delicate. But her eyes, when they opened, were pure alpha fire. How old is she? Marcus whispered, his voice breaking. Trying to be sure, maybe. I touched her fevered brow. She turns 6 in 2 weeks. He was across the room before I could blink. Gods! He sank to his knees beside her, his hands trembling as they hovered over her face. 6 years. You've had her for 6 years. His hands on Hope's face, his power flowing out of him like water. I felt it, the warmth, the recognition, the bond snapping into place with a force that made me gasp. His daughter. He had a daughter. And then he looked up at me, and I saw everything. The grief, the regret, the knowledge of what he'd thrown away. The comprehension that I'd left and built a life without him, and had his child in secret because he'd made me believe I was worthless. Why didn't you tell me? His voice cracked. Why didn't you choose me? The words came out soft, devastated. We stared at each other across the body of our dying child, and all the years between us collapsed into this single moment, this reckoning. And then Isabella appeared. Chapter 9, The Truth That Burns. She stood in the doorway, the boy, Marcus's supposed heir, held by the hand. He was 4, maybe 5, with dark hair and a sullen expression. He looked nothing like Marcus, nothing like Hope. What's she doing here? Isabella's voice was sharp, accusatory. Marcus stood slowly, his power filling the room until the walls felt like they were closing in. The child is sick. She's not Pack. Isabella sneered. She's my daughter. The words rang out, absolute, final. My blood, my heir, and you. He turned to her, and I saw the truth in his eyes. You lied to me. The boy flinched. Whether from the tone or the power or the knowledge that his world was shattering, I couldn't tell. Isabella's face went white. Marcus. The healer confirmed it yesterday. The boy isn't mine. He never was. He stepped toward her, each footfall deliberate. You played me. You and your father. You infiltrated my pack, bore another man's child. And let me believe I'd finally gotten what I'd thrown away my marriage for. She backed up, pulling the boy with her. I can explain. Explain what? His roar shook the foundations. Explain how you watched me grieve for a son I already lost? How you watched me destroy my mate? How you took everything from me and left me with nothing? The boy started crying, Hope stirred, her eyes fluttering open. Green like mine, but with the weight of Alpha Power behind them. She looked at Marcus, really looked at him, and I saw recognition in her gaze. Papa? The word was weak. A question. A prayer. Marcus turned, and the rage drained from his face, replaced by something raw and vulnerable. Yes, baby. I'm here. I've got you. He knelt, gathering her into his arms, pressing his forehead to hers. The pack magic flowed between them, father to daughter, alpha to heir, and I watched her fever break, watched color return to her cheeks, watched life flood back into her. Isabella turned to run, but guards appeared in the doorway, summoned by the alpha's rage. She was trapped. Marcus stood, hope cradled in his arms, and looked at me. Really looked at me. Where is your locket? My hand went to my throat, instinctive I'd stopped wearing it after I left. It felt like a noose. Gone. Give it back to her. He addressed Isabella, his voice cold enough to freeze the sun. Give her everything you stole. Isabella's laugh was high, hysterical. I have nothing of hers. The locket. The one you took from my desk. The one with Lucas's picture. She flinched. I remembered that locket. Gold, shaped like a moon, holding a tiny portrait of our son. I'd left it behind in my panic to escape she'd taken it. Of course she had. A guard searched her, found it in her pocket. He handed it to Marcus, who pressed it into my palm. The metal was warm, alive. And then he said the words I'd been waiting 5 years to hear. I'm sorry. Gods, Celine. I'm so fucking sorry. Chapter 10. The reckoning. They put Isabella in the cells. The boy, her son, not ours, was sent to his real father's pack with a warning that would keep them from ever crossing our borders again. The trial would come later. The punishment. But I didn't care about any of that. I cared about the girl in my arms. Our daughter, who was healing with every breath. I cared about the man standing before me. The father of my children, who had broken me and was now trying to put me back together with nothing but regret and shaking hands. Talk to me, he whispered. Please, just talk. So I did. I told him everything. The bleeding that wasn't a period. The pregnancy he'd never wanted. The birth in a tiny room above a tavern, with no one but a stranger to help. The years of running, of hiding, of raising his daughter alone because he'd taught me that needing him meant being destroyed. I was 30 when I had her, I said, my voice steady now, not angry. Not anymore, just tired. She was my revenge and my redemption, my proof that I wasn't broken, that I didn't need you. You didn't. He reached out, hesitated, then gently tucked a strand of hair behind my ear. The gesture was so familiar it made my chest ache. You built a life without me. You raised our daughter to be strong and brave and perfect. You did what I couldn't. You survived. Why didn't you look for me? The question was small. The girl I'd been peeking out from behind the armor of the woman I'd become. I thought you were gone because you wanted to be? Because I deserved it. His hand fell to his side. I spent 5 years in hell, Celine. 5 years building a kingdom I didn't want, because I'd traded it for a family that turned out to be a lie. And every single day, I woke up and reached for you and found nothing but empty space. Good. The word came out fierce. That's what you deserve. To know what it feels like to have everything and lose it. Is that what you want? For me to suffer? No. I looked at Hope, sleeping in his arms, her small hands clutching his shirt. I want you to understand. to really understand what you did, what you threw away. I do. His voice cracked. Every day I understand a little more, and every day I die a little more, knowing I can't fix it. Maybe you can't. I opened the locket, stared at Lucas's face, eternally 3 years old. Maybe some things are too broken to fix. Chapter 11. Your bastard son is dead. She said it from the doorway of the cells 3 days later. I hadn't gone to see her. Hadn't wanted to give her that power. But she demanded to speak to me. Just me. Marcus didn't want me to go. She's dangerous unstable. So am I. I kissed Hope's forehead, tucked her into the bed she'd been given in the palace wing, and went. Isabella looked smaller in the cell, less threatening. Her dark hair was matted, her expensive dress torn. She looked like what she was, a woman who'd gambled everything on a lie and lost. Where is he? She didn't waste time. My son. With his father. I kept my voice level. Where he belongs. He belongs with me. He belongs with the man who sired him, not the one you tried to trick into raising him. Her eyes narrowed. You think you've won, don't you? You think because you whelped a brat in some backwater. Careful. The power in my voice surprised us both. That brat is the Alpha's daughter. The true heir. The one whose existence proves you're nothing but a liar. She lunged at the bars, her face twisted with rage. He loved me. He chose me over you. No. I stepped closer, close enough to smell her fear. He chose the idea of a son. The idea of an heir. He chose a fantasy. And you were convenient. Bitch. Perhaps. I smiled, and it wasn't kind. But I'm the bitch who survived. I'm the bitch who raised his daughter alone while you played house with a stolen child. I'm the bitch who's going to watch you pay for every moment you made me doubt my worth. She laughed then, high and hysterical. You think you'll keep him? You think this changes anything? He still left you. He still chose me. He... Your bastard son is dead. The words came out quiet, devastating. The life you built on lies is dead. The fantasy you sold my mate is dead. Her face went white. What? The boy is fine, I clarified. But the son Marcus thought he had, the one you convinced him was his heir, that son never existed. You killed him with your lies the moment you opened your mouth. I turned to walk away, but her voice stopped me. I was pregnant with his child once before the boy. I lost it. Did he tell you that? No, he hadn't, and I didn't care. Your grief doesn't excuse your cruelty. I said, echoing words I'd once said to another man in another cell. Your loss doesn't justify destroying my family. Family? She sneered. You think you have a family? He left you. He'll leave you again, because at the end of the day, you're just a broken womb who couldn't keep her son alive. The barb hit. Of course it hit. It was aimed at the softest part of me, the wound that had never healed. But I was 36 years old. And I'd learned something in the years since Marcus had discarded me. I'd learned that my worth wasn't measured in the children I bore, or the mate I kept. It was measured in the love I gave, the life I'd built, the daughter I'd raised to be strong enough to survive a world that tried to break her. Maybe, I said, turning back to face her one last time. But I'm still standing, and you're in a cage. So tell me, Isabella. Which of us is really broken? I walked away, then left her screaming my name until her voice gave out. Left her with nothing but her regrets and the knowledge that she'd lost. Chapter 12. The slow work of healing. Hope recovered completely. Within a week, she was running through the palace gardens, her laughter filling spaces that had been silent for too long. Marcus watched her with wonder, this daughter he'd never known he had. this perfect miracle that had proven his judgment wrong in every way that mattered. "She has your laugh," he said one evening. We were sitting on the steps of the memorial garden, watching her chase fireflies. "And your stubbornness." "She's alpha-born," I said. "That comes from you." "Maybe." He was quiet for a moment. "But the way she loves, that's all you." "We were trying. That was the thing no one told you about reconciliation. It wasn't grand gestures or passionate declarations. It was small, quiet moments. It was him learning not to flinch when I touched him. It was me learning to say we instead of I. It was both of us learning to look at our daughter without seeing the ghost of the son we'd lost. Lucas's room remained untouched. We couldn't bring ourselves to change it, to erase him. So we left it as it was, a shrine to our grief, and built new memories elsewhere. In the library where Marcus taught Hope to read. In the gardens where she shifted for the first time. In the kitchen where we cooked meals together, the three of us, learning to be a family we never thought we'd be. But the trust, that was harder. Every time he came home late, I smelled perfume that wasn't there. Every time he touched me, I remembered the years he'd looked through me. The wound was healing, but it was a scar, thick and raised, a constant reminder of what had been done. "I don't expect you to forgive me," he said one night. We were in his chambers, our chambers again, though I hadn't moved back in fully. I slept there sometimes. Not always. "I don't expect to forgive you either," I admitted, "but I'm trying to understand." "Why?" "Because of her." I looked at Hope, asleep between us on the bed we were cautiously learning to share again. Because she deserves to see that people can be better than their worst moments. That love can survive being broken. He reached for my hand. I let him take it. His fingers were warm. Familiar. The calluses were new. He'd been working with his hands, building things. Trying to rebuild himself, I think. "I loved you," he whispered. "Even when I was destroying you, I loved you. I just forgot how to show it. Love isn't enough." The words were hard, necessary. Love without action is just a word. I needed you to choose me, to choose us, and you didn't. "I know," his voice cracked, "and I will spend the rest of my life earning back the right to even ask for your forgiveness. The rest of your life is a long time. Not long enough." He squeezed my hand, not nearly long enough. Chapter 13, The Weight of Crowns. 4 months after I returned, Marcus called the packs together, a gathering of all the alphas in the territories, a show of strength and unity, and he wanted me by his side, not as his cast-off mate, not as the mother of his hidden child, as his Luna, his equal. I almost refused. The idea of standing before those who'd watched him discard me, who'd known about his affair and said nothing, who'd pitied me in whispers, it made me want to disappear again, to become the ghost they'd all expected me to be. But Hope took my hand that morning and said, "You look like a queen, Mama." I did. I wore silver, the Luna color, with Lucas's locket around my neck and Hope's hand in mine. Marcus stood beside me, not in front, and when he addressed the gathering, he didn't speak of conquest, or strength, or alpha dominance. He spoke of balance, of partnership, of the understanding that true power came not from ruling alone, but from ruling together. "Luna Selene is my mate," he said, his voice carrying across the gathered wolves. "She is the mother of my children, the keeper of my heart. And she has taught me that a king without a queen is just a man with a crown." The words were public, a declaration. But they were also private, meant just for me. After the ceremony, after the pledges of loyalty, and the feasting and the formalities that made up pack life, We stood together on the balcony overlooking the territory. Hope was asleep in her rooms, exhausted from the attention and the excitement. "I'm not the same woman I was," I said. The night was cool, the stars bright. "Good," he replied. "I'm not the same man." "What happens now?" "Now?" He turned to me, his eyes reflecting starlight. "Now we build something new. Not what we had before, that's gone, but something stronger. Something earned."
"Earned through suffering?"
"Through surviving it." He reached for my hand, and this time I didn't just let him take it. I held on. "I can't promise I won't fail you again. I can't promise I'll always be what you need. But I can promise I'll spend every day trying." "That sounds exhausting." "It will be." He smiled. That same sad smile I'd once loved, but now it held hope instead of just grief. "But you're worth the exhaustion." Chapter 14, the epilogue that isn't an ending. 2 years later, I stood in the same garden where I'd once watched my son chase butterflies. Hope ran through the same paths, her laughter mixing with the sound of another child's, smaller, younger. With her father's dark hair and my stubborn chin, I was pregnant again. This time, on purpose. This time with love and intention, and the knowledge that I was whole, regardless of the outcome. The bleeding had stopped completely, the healer said. My body had finally healed itself, that the grief had finally released its hold. Marcus came up behind me, his hands settling on my stomach, his chin resting on my shoulder. "He's kicking." "She's kicking," I corrected, though we didn't know yet. We wanted to be surprised. "He, she, hope." He kissed my temple. "As long as they're healthy and happy." "And we are?" I asked, the question still necessary after all this time. "We are." His arms tightened. "We're a family. A messy, broken, beautiful family." I thought about Lucas then, as I did every day. About the boy he'd been. About the brother he'd never get to be. I thought about the woman I'd been at 29, bleeding out in his room, convinced I was worthless because my body had failed me. I thought about the man Marcus had been, so desperate for an heir he'd destroyed the one thing that mattered. We'd been fools. Both of us. Broken by grief and pride and the terrible things we said when we were hurting. But we'd learned. Slowly. Painfully. We'd learned that love wasn't enough, but it was a start. We'd learned that trust had to be rebuilt brick by brick. We'd learned that forgiveness wasn't a destination you reached, but a road you walked every single day. Hope came running up, breathless, her face flushed. "Papa, Mama, come see. I found a butterfly." We followed her, hand in hand, to where a monarch rested on a rose. The same kind that had drawn Lucas away from me that final day. But this time I didn't panic. This time I watched Hope approach it with wonder, her small hand outstretched, and I saw the butterfly land on her finger without fear. "See," she whispered, turning to us with eyes wide with magic. "He remembers me." Marcus's hand tightened on mine. We didn't speak. We didn't have to. We both felt it. The presence of the son we'd lost. The brother who was still with us. The ghost who'd guided us back to each other through 5 years of pain and separation. I was 38 years old when I learned that endings aren't always endings. Sometimes they're just the pause before the next chapter. That you can lose everything and still have everything that matters. That love can survive betrayal. That trust can be rebuilt. That a family can be forged from ashes and still be whole. Where the liars went. As for Isabella Blackwood, she kept the name she'd stolen, was exiled 2 borders south, her dowry lands forfeit. Her father's crest struck from every record. The rival Alpha who'd sired her heir took her in, briefly,
then married her off to a border baron already buried in gambling debt. She wakes each morning in a crumbling keep that smells of wet stone and defeat, still counting coins that never arrive, still hearing the echo of a cell door that never quite closes. Her father lost 3 villages, and his best warriors in the compensation levy Marcus imposed. His own pack whispered traitor until the title stuck. This season he sits at foreign council tables as a cautionary tale, drinking faster than the wine can be poured, waiting for a son-in-law who will never again ask his advice. They live, if you can call it that, on the outer rim of every map I draw for hope, a blurred line labeled, "Here be monsters," a reminder that mercy can also be exile, and that some ghosts are left alive to haunt themselves. The boy's real name was Claire, a soft, flower name his mother had whispered once, then never spoke again once the lie took root. After the guards escorted him south, across the border into Harrow Reach, he was delivered to the man whose blood actually ran in his veins. Alpha called her Harrow, a hard-bitten wolf who had never expected to claim a son he'd sired in a single, drunken treaty night. Calder met the child at the edge of his territory, took one look at the boy's hollow stare, and dropped to one knee so their eyes were level. "You're not a pawn here, Claire. You're just my boy. That's all you ever have to be." The first winter was hardest. Claire woke screaming, convinced every shadow was Isabella dragging him back to the cell she'd vanished into. Calder kept a cot in his own chamber for 3 months, sleeping blade close until the nightmares thinned. Slowly, the boy learned the names of cousins who didn't flinch when he laughed, learned that a full moon could mean play instead of performance, learned to answer to Claire instead of the false title he'd been forced to wear. By his 7th birthday, he could shoot a short bow and skin a rabbit without trembling. By 9, he had a best friend, Calder's ward, a gap-toothed beta girl who dared him to climb the watchtower and promised to catch him if he fell. He never asked why his mother never sent word. Calder had simply told him, "Some people choose lies over love. We don't chase ghosts here." The end. I know exactly the question in your mind right now. How in the world did you get pregnant? Honestly, I left that for the last. I was 29 years old when I learned that some moments destroy you and create you in the same breath. It was the night he brought the papers. He came home late, the home he left. The scent of whiskey and jasmine so thick on him, I could taste it in the back of my throat. I was in Lucas's room again, sitting on the small bed that still held the indent of a child who'd been gone for 4 years, touching toys that would never be played with, breathing in a scent that had long since faded to memory. "Celine." His voice was rough, not the smooth alpha command I was used to, but something broken, desperate. I didn't turn. "You're drunk." "I needed to be." He crossed the room, his footsteps heavy on the wooden floor. When he reached for me, his hand missed, landing on my shoulder like a question. I needed to not feel this for 5 minutes. "What is this, Marcus?" I finally looked at him, and his face was the ruin of the man I'd married. Guilt? Regret? Or just the hangover from her bed? "Don't." He sat beside me on the small bed, the frame groaning under his weight. The moonlight through the window caught the gold band on his finger, the one he'd never taken off, even while he was taking off everything else. "Just don't." The papers were in his other hand. I could see them. The thick cream envelope. The official seal. "The death certificate of our marriage. Signed and ready, Celine," he said softly. "Stop." I stood, needing space, needing air, needing not to feel his body heat next to mine in the room where our son's ghost still played. "Just stop. Sign the papers. Give her what she wants. Give yourself what you want. Just leave me out of it." "I can't." He stood too, swaying slightly, the whiskey making him unsteady. "I can't leave you like this. In this room. With him." Why not? The rage came sudden and hot, burning through years of silence. You left me everywhere else in our bed, in our life, in our future. Why should this room be any different? Because I still... He broke off, running a hand through his hair, the gesture so familiar it hurt. Gods, Celine, I still can't breathe when you're not near. I still reach for you in the middle of the night and find nothing but cold sheets. I still... Don't! I backed away, hitting the wall, Lucas's drawings fluttering with the movement. Don't you dare! Not now! Not after everything! He moved like a predator, like the alpha he was, crowding me against the wall, his hands caging me in. His eyes were wild, desperate, the whiskey stripping away the cold control he'd worn like armor for 4 years. I miss you. The words were torn from him, raw and bleeding, every day, every moment. I miss the way you laughed. I miss the way you smelled. I miss the way you used to touch my face when you thought I was asleep. I miss being the man you looked at like I could do no wrong. That man died with Lucas. I pushed against his chest, but he was immovable. You killed him. You killed us. I know, his forehead pressed to mine, the gesture so intimate I couldn't breathe. I know. I'm sorry. I'm so fucking sorry. Sorry doesn't bring him back. Nothing does. His voice cracked. Nothing brings back our son. Nothing fixes what I broke. Nothing makes this right. His hands came up, cradling my face with a gentleness I hadn't felt in years. But you're still here, and I'm still here. And for tonight, that's enough. It wasn't. It shouldn't have been. But his lips were on mine before I could say no. And the taste of him, whiskey and grief and the man I'd loved since I was 18, unraveled something in me. Not love, not forgiveness, but need. Raw, desperate need for the touch of someone who'd known me before I was broken. I kissed him back, hard enough to bruise, hard enough to punish, hard enough to forget, for one stolen moment, that he'd destroyed us. His hands were everywhere, my hair, my face, the curve of my waist, the small of my back, touching me like I was water, and he was dying of thirst. Like I was air and he'd been suffocating. Like I was everything he'd ever needed and had been too proud to ask for. We fell onto Lucas's small bed, the frame protesting, the blanket that still smelled faintly of our son tangling around our legs. It was wrong. It was profane. It was making love in a cemetery, in a shrine, in the holiest place in our broken world. But it was also healing. His tears fell on my skin as he moved, each one a confession, each one a prayer I held him, not with forgiveness, but with understanding. Because I was broken too. Because I missed the woman I'd been before grief and betrayal had carved her into something harder. Because for one night, I wanted to be touched like I mattered, even if it was a lie. After, we lay tangled in the too small bed, his body curled around mine, his face pressed into my neck. He whispered things I couldn't answer, promises I knew he couldn't keep, apologies that tasted like whiskey and tasted like heartbreak. I'll fix this, he murmured, his voice slurring with exhaustion and drink. I'll make it right, I swear it. But morning came, as it always did, and the papers were still there, unsigned but unforgotten. He woke with a hangover, and the memory of what we'd done shadowing his eyes. Celine, don't. I stood, wrapping Lucas's blanket around my shoulders like armor. It was one night. It doesn't change anything. But I was wrong. It changed everything. It just took me 3 weeks to find out. I was 29 years old when I learned that a single night of grief and whiskey could create a life that would save mine. I was 30 when I learned that my body wasn't broken after all. It had just been waiting for the right secret to hold on to. Hope. That's what I named her in my heart, even then, because she was hope, in its purest form. Hope that I wasn't broken. Hope that I could survive without him. Hope that something good could come from everything he'd broken the papers. They remain unsigned. A reminder of what I'd left, what he'd offered, what he'd thrown away. One afternoon I sat in the great hall when the news came, Alpha Marcus's assumed son is dead, the guard had said, expecting me to rejoice somehow. But something in me broke, and I wept. I wept so hard I sat on the floor of the hall. When Marcus walked in hours later, he found me there mourning, with my eyes swollen. Hope sat beside me. He moved with curiosity as he asked, "What happened?" "They said your bastard son is dead," I said faintly, and then I saw it. The man in him broke as he wept. He wept not because he was his son, but because we know that somewhere someone is broken, just as we were a few years ago.